I'm Michael Cross, host of the KOSU Daily Podcast. Every weekday, I bring you the biggest Oklahoma stories of the day with reporting and analysis from our team of journalists and partners. Get the news you need to start your day in less than 10 minutes. Find the KOSU Daily in your podcast feed and subscribe now.
This is Songwriters and Tour Writers, a music podcast from KOSU. I'm Matthew Viriapa. On this episode is Willie Carlisle.
He was dead inside my head long before he died. So making the arrangements felt natural, felt nice. No medicine for saving him from cigs and booze and salt. Feels pretty nice to say I thought his sadness was my fault.
Folk singer Willie Carlisle is not a native to the Arkansas Ozarks, but it's a place that he fell in love with. He has a new album out titled Critterland, partially about trying to find community there and how he tries to share that with people who come to listen to his music. In this episode, hear Carlisle talk about the album, moving to Arkansas, and his favorite Oklahoma story.
I hear drunk footfalls through bedroom walls, find comfort in the south. I'm my own father now.
My name is Willie Carlisle, and I'm a folk singer and songwriter. I play a bunch of different instruments, banjo, fiddle, guitar, accordion, harmonica, and occasionally a few other things. And I describe my music as somewhere between folkloric and Americana.
I'm talking to you on Valentine's Day. I thought it'd be good to ask, what made you fall in love with the Ozarks in Arkansas?
Well, so I wasn't born there, much to the chagrin of a few people, because I try not to claim it too much. But I got there about 13 years ago, and I came with great intention to learn banjo music and study poetry. I started attending old-time jams pretty much right away when I got there, and going to square dances. Because I was new in the area, I didn't really have any friends. I was also teaching. I was teaching at the University of Arkansas. And so it was really hard for me to connect with people because, honestly, I just talked to 18-year-olds from Texas who was teaching to write sentences. My whole social life and source of joy was other poets and then these old-time musicians who had learned from traditions that spanned, you know, in some cases, a couple hundred years, who were willing to share. I was doing kind of everything from, I wrote a really long essay for the Journal of Missouri Folklore back at the time about the politics of transference and Ozark fiddle music. I was learning to call square dances because they needed callers more than needed fiddle players, and I was a pretty garbage fiddle player. I was living on a hobby farm for a while out there, and I was not a person that was exposed to farm or animal life very much when I was younger. And so I was just kind of fascinated with all of it, all of the possibilities that this kind of rural patch of America offered. And then a lot of its complexities were really interesting to me too. The politics of people who have been abandoned by social and civic services, but also have developed a sense of self-reliance.
Chickens in the backyard, preserves in mason jars. Dry county dust has got me feeling kind of old. Cats on the windowsill, I'm feeling shaky still. Mama's in the kitchen, singing sweet by and by. She can't quite hold the tune, she's dancing round the room. I disappoint her, she'll still carry on. Thank God forgiveness comes in so many shapes. I've been traveling in anger, trying to ditch the shades. If you get high in Texarkana, can you still wake up in grace? That's Mom in the kitchen singing sweet by and by.
I also had never encountered faith in a way that was, you know, as profound as was out there. raised in Kansas, there were German Catholics and German Protestants, and they didn't really talk much, and they weren't very fervent. In Arkansas, and especially in the Ozarks, these kind of smaller church communities were where people got a lot of their work done, but also where they expressed the most important things to them in terms of their like spiritual life. And I found that for the first time, for a lot of people that came first, I didn't agree with it, but I found it interesting. It has made me realize that there are things in the world sort of worth living for. If other people can live with such kind of profound faith and self-reliance, well, then maybe I can too.
Thank God forgiveness comes in so many shapes. I've been traveling in anger, trying to ditch the shakes. If you go blind in Texarkana, you can still wake up in grace. That's Mom in the kitchen singing sweet by and by.
What's interesting to me about your kind of musical background is you're relatively new, not just to this kind of like music, like you didn't grow up playing this type of music. I read that you didn't even pick up a guitar until you were 18.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that make you more aware of, I guess, certain things within this culture of music?
You know, it's a little bit of both. Surely somebody that grew up with it and has, you know, at least a decade of experience on me has more musical ability. And, you know, I don't play, I play music that is difficult to me and would be difficult to a beginner, but like experts on any of the instruments I play would be like, well, it's fairly simple. But it also has meant I've got something to prove. It's made me maybe a little bit more voracious. It also sometimes has made me wrong. You know, sometimes I'm just incorrect about something. It means that some of the more protean aspects of the music are really fascinating to me. For example, the banjo, of course, being initially, it's an African-American instrument that was absconded with by whites who wanted to perform and create minstrel shows. It's been really fascinating for me to kind of dig into that history and use it as a metaphor for like a whole swath of American history. The same thing with the proliferation of the button accordion, where in some cases in southern Texas and northern Mexico, colonizers would come and bring their accordions. In the case of South Texas, North Mexico, Germans, and then the indigenous and Spanish-speaking populations down there would emulate the music of the colonizers in order to make money, and then create these kind of incredible creolizations that have far surpassed their initial tradition.
In the middle of a Tennessee midwinter rain, a two-headed lamb was by the old newborn, and as she latched on to her mother, the cry rang out double, and she was dead in the meadow by the morning.
What instrument do you usually start writing on?
A little bit of everything, honestly. I like to have all my toys spread out along on the floor. They come to me in so many different ways. I'm lucky if I have the right instrument the first time. I recently have been writing on banjo primarily, but historically I've primarily written on guitar. I find accordion the easiest for me to arrange on, by far. And the fiddle the easiest for me to think melodically on.
And I know scattered o'er the cursed world, there are frightening bones to find. Bones of people born too soon, lambs too strange to survive, born only meat for wolves, or born a freak to humankind. Still there were four eyes shining bravely in the meadow that night.
Yeah, so are you just like, you find like a melodic bit on one instrument and you just try it on different things?
Yeah, it's really when I can, you know, sometimes you're in a hotel room and you just can't do that, or you're on tour and you can't do that. But every time I can, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you can't be breaking out the accordion in a Best Western.
I mean, I've done it before, but I've gotten in trouble for it more than once. Yeah.
Said even God can make a fuck up. He overlooked an ordinary thing. Twice the robins singing in the old growth tree.
That leads pretty well into my next question. Do you have a space that you like to write in?
No. To me, I met a poet one time that would like write a candle and had a very special room that they only wrote in, and would sit with a blank sheet of paper and a fountain pen. And, you know, she had a Pulitzer, right? She's a great poet. I can't imagine that. I have to be quite busy. My brain doesn't shut up. And so the best ideas come when the house is bustling with activity. I love hearing a snippet of something on the radio in the other room and mishearing something and being like, well, that seems cool. What if we tried that? You know? Yeah. I'd say that like mishearings, accidents, I find like turns of phrase really interesting. The phrase, this is so silly, but I was outside of a Planet Fitness in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the phrase Murfreesboro Planet Fitness came to me as really funny rhythmically, and it uses all of the vowel sounds, A-E-I-O-U, and I was like, this doesn't happen very often. This is so cool. And of course, I'm not going to write a song about Murfreesboro Planet Fitness. Maybe someday, but you get what I mean, is that the world is waiting to be discovered, and I tend to write out in the world. I'm more of a notebook jotter than a quill user.
Critterland is your third album. Did you go into this third album with a clear idea or plan of what you wanted?
Only a little bit. I have a lot on the back burner. I had about 40 songs in a rough shape, maybe ready to record. It's hard to think about, if you're a folk singer, it can be hard to think about albums as coherent documents because you just have a lot of songs, right? It's a lot. It's about songs more than it's about albums. But I wanted to make something that was intimate. I wanted to make something quickly because I've been working our asses off. I've been loving it. I don't trust or like the music industry, but I do like my little team. It's like we're running a fair trade coffee shop in a world of Starbucks.
Turned around in Tidewater, all alone in Pueblo. I've been driving with a death wish down the mountains on my phone. Half the places I've been might be laced with psilocybin. I've been dreaming of a country I saw at the rodeo.
I believe strongly in what we do. So I wanted to make a record that felt like it was stuff that I had wanted to talk about for a long time. It ended up being about history, about moving out into the woods and making a go with life out there, about failing to do so, about suicide and overdose. It's a pretty heavy record, but there's some triumph and failure in it, I think.
You can write it on my tombstone, outlaw life looks pretty wholesome. When you pay the price in foolishness it takes to get you free. Hire lonesome, kill the bitter parts of me.
Is there any meaning behind the title of the album, which takes its title from one of the songs?
Critterland, in my own sort of personal history, was what I called this little intentional community I tried to move out onto. And the song is kind of about that, but really that song is about trying to discover values that are given to you by nature. The chorus of that song goes,
oh, the sparrow on the wing taught me to fight for you, and the possum keeps your teeth sharper than I do. You can bury me where I make my last stand at the battle of Critterland.
What I mean by that is that when I got close to what was real in the world, which is to say the natural rhythms of this place out in the rural Ozarks, I discovered a lot of my sort of worst values falling away. I wasn't able to live by those values as intensely as the people that live out there. And there's certainly a possibility of, you know, fetishized some bucolic thing. So the point of it is, of Critterland, is trying to find is that there might be a place or a way of thinking where you can learn from something that is deeper than your own self. And there might also be a place where there's something worth dying for and thus worth living for.
And is that still something that you're searching for or trying to find?
I personally have found it in this work, in the work of folk singing. I want to offer it to other people in concerts, and ideally have the show be an invitation to find that kind of thing for themselves, you know, kind of just using the folk process as a metaphor for it, you know.
I could have been a businessman. I was too hot-headed, plus I never had the money, plus I kind of got arrested. But my sweet old folks thought I'd make a pretty decent one of those, and I still live the kind of life where people judge on your clothes. Now it's 40 miles of back road on all-terrain tires, that little blue hymnal sitting open all the while, singing songs to a god I've met but do not know, making wagers on the critters that we see crossing the road. Yeah, the sparrow on the wing taught me to find you, and the possum knows his own mind more than I do. I'm here for all the love that I can stand. Take me to Critterland.
Coming up next, my conversation with Willie Carlisle leads us to Oklahoma and what he finds interesting about Woody Guthrie. That's up next, right after this break.
KOSU is your partner along life's journey. Whether it's your daily drive to work or your path to attaining knowledge, KOSU helps you get there with inspiring storytelling. Through our journalism, our conversations, and our music, KOSU deepens your understanding of your community and your world. It's made possible because people like you are contributing to this station. Won't you join them? Start your monthly membership at donate.kosu.org.
What I keep coming back to with Guthrie is he said a folk musician's job is to disturb comfortable people and to comfort disturbed people.
There is trouble in the darksome sky. He saw it as a boy from great granddad's covered wagon from the crux of Illinois. For the promise of the daffodils amongst the hard limestone, they carved the die of fortune out of buffalo bones.
I come back to that a lot. Maybe more than any of the individual politics. You know, Woody's a really interesting figure in that regard, too, because he definitely played songs for corporations for money, right? There's times where you could be like, well, he sold out. You know, in the 21st century, if he was doing it, he might be writing jingles for Walmart. It's really fascinating, especially such a mentally troubled guy, that he had such a verisimilitude in his career, while at the same time maintaining these really egalitarian personal values.
Oh, in my dumb debasement, I still find great relief that on the lamb and on the dole they counted themselves free. I have hustled towards the overpass to sleep there in the rain. I have settled with my pocket knife and carved out all their names. If the Great Depression made us, there's no need to despair. I won't waste a single moment of the work that brought me here.
It's got to be a sign of the times, right? In the 1930s and in the Dust Bowl and in the the New Deal and the Works Progress Administration projects that occurred afterwards, as well as the rise of the radio, you have this massive influx of like personal opinion in democracy, but also personal agency enabled by the state, right? What people would now call a welfare state was really a wartime economy to fight poverty, right? A war on poverty and not a war on the poor. Here in the 21st century, it's hard not to see the analogs, right? We're supposedly at full employment and corporate profits are off the chain. Corporations are setting record profits, but people are struggling to pay rent. We have a housing crisis, the likes of which we haven't seen since the Great Society or the Great Depression. And at the same time, we have this massive influx of networks where people can exchange information amongst each other. In this case, on a larger scale than the radio ever provided people, in social media.
If the Great Depression made us, there's no need to despair. I won't waste a single moment of the love brought me here.
Part of me wonders, like, how folk traditions and folk music has adapted to the digital age, because I never grew up listening to a lot of this type of music, but my entryway through it was through YouTube. And like, is that just as authentic as someone listening to their family, like in the barn, playing old time music? If I'm just watching like a Willie Carlisle video on YouTube,
you know, at risk of editorializing too much, I don't think any of it's authentic. I think that folklore is what happens when the notebook closes and the folklorist turns off their recorder. Even in like the resurgence of Irish music, that happened with great intention. And many of the Irish players of the 19th century wouldn't recognize late 20th century Irish music. It would have totally different instrumentation and a different set of values, because musicians in the 20th century decided to create a new context in order to try to keep their traditional music alive. That's a very similar thing in American folk music, where you have some of the most popular bands in our scene emerging from little folk music festivals like Cliff Top or Mount Airy or something. Or you even have like performers like Gillian Welch, not being from many of the areas that they're singing about or many of the traditions that they're participating in, they're not actively there, right? Bob Dylan had the Harry Smith anthology, which is the sort of one of the great founding documents of the Smithsonian Folklife record label. But he never owned it. He just listened to it a couple of times and then was so inspired by it that he wrote a lot of songs, right, that riff on it. What I mean to say is that I feel like authenticity is a trap, and that instead I personally want to lean into the fact like this is a drag show. And I want everybody to know that I'm not making fun of you. I'm making fun of me, and that I am finding meaning in community and trying to create community that is historically rooted, but not historically accurate. I think what folk music can give us is a means to engage in a dialectic where we look closely at the past, sometimes through the music of the past, right, through that lens. And then we can see sort of new things. I think the rest of it is a costume show or a history or like a family tree, like a genealogy. And those things are valuable to me. They are. I love the dress up show and I love the genealogy. that said, can I make a difference in the world by actively discussing how a version of Turkey in the Straw in Stone County, Arkansas is massively different than a turkey in the straw played in Stone County, Missouri? I don't think so.
Do you have any experiences or stories passing through Oklahoma that you'd be able to share?
Boy, that's actually going to take me a second. There's so many. There is more than one person that lives in Oklahoma between Tulsa and Oklahoma City. There's more than one person who I have been so in love with over there and have such affection for that I just live for these kind of pained visits that might have, you know, one hug or one handhold in them. I think my favorite, I played at the Philbrook, this marvelous museum in Tulsa, and it was a, you know, pretty laid back storytelling concert. But afterwards, I can't even remember the name of the bar because we just, me and a couple of these people I care about very much, just got plastered. And one of them, I'd spent a long time with months in the van, and they're from the Cherokee Nation, and they were talking about their experience as making art as an indigenous person. And it was so fascinating to like be a fly on the wall in that conversation, and then to have other artists from that background like echoing it and adding on to it. And what struck me about it was how special our microcosms are. Oklahoma has been the site of so much musical innovation and so little goddamn musical credit. You know, so much good has come out of indigenous and native groups there, and also so much has come out of impoverished or ignored groups there. Just in terms of my own world, I'd never thought about it with like sculpture and painting.
Well, Tulsa's last magician got it started for, pulled a quarter from his own ear and spun it on the floor. Since there's no good tricks but old ones, the lion ain't that hard. He saved up all his quarters and he bought a deck of cards. And he learned ragtime piano, though his teacher thought him slow. Got a black belt in karate from a pawn shop video. And he'd practice all his worst mistakes in a dirty bathroom mirror. And when his mother drank, he learned to disappear.
I love a $50 motel room. Who wouldn't, right? A $50 Route 66 hotel room where they let me pay cash and woke up the next day and went to a delightful diner. And I know that's not much of a memory, but, you know, there's no punchline to this story. I just loved getting to live inside of another artist's mind for a moment, who is from a world so different than mine and so close to mine. And that is something special that Oklahoma can give you, that if you're in New York City, you might run into that because there's all kinds of people that live in New York City, right? But you're a lot more likely to run into the exact same kind of social climber, the exact same kind of, you know, somebody that wants to be Starbucks and doesn't say, no, I grow the fucking coffee beans and I built the coffee cart, you know, and this is my grandpa's coffee cart and I wheel it around this neighborhood. Hope that answers your question, Matt.
Said, I wonder where my dollar went, had the flower bloom so fast. Said, I can't reveal my secret, well, they rarely failed to ask. And the crowd all thought him funny, good at sleight of hand. He had this grand finale they refused to understand. They demanded explanation when the card pulled was their own. And that's why Tulsa's last magician lost his faith and headed home.
When you're making new music in this tradition that so much of it is about old-timey songs, and how do you approach writing new music that can fit in next to like some of those old bluegrass standards or Ozark old-time songs?
I don't worry about it. And I think that a profound difference between, you know, it's important. Everyone is special, right? Everybody has, there is, nobody is, I really believe this. I think everybody's lived experience is massively special. And one of the things that is lucky to me about mine is that these are living traditions, is that we get to go places and hang out with people that have intimate knowledge of these things, even if they learn them from field recordings and then reproduce them, right? There's a lot more deep listening to that material live and in person, such that it just kind of suffuses your life. So I'll find sometimes that I wrote a song and then I'll be like, oh shoot, that's Wabash Cannonball, you know, like a month later.
From the great Atlantic Ocean to the wide Pacific shore, from the queen of flowing mountains to the south fell by the shore. She's mighty tall and handsome and known quite well by all. She's the combination on the Wabash Cannonball.
I don't mind that at all. I'm not anxious about it, where I get my influences. Probably because the folk process is so decidedly open source. It's teach yourself. It's find your community. It's learn from each other and teach each other. It's a little more egalitarian. That's something I think I wish that I have, that I feel like is very special, that I wish more people felt like they had, is a community like that. That's kind of what we try to do in shows.
I have a distinct memory of seeing you last year in Tulsa. It really seems like you live by the chorus of this one song. I can't believe I'm blanking on it now. It's a song that is about, you know, a big tent and like how there's enough space for everybody, basically.
Yeah, your memory is very good, actually. I'm glad that that was your takeaway, because the chorus of that song is, your heart is a big tent. You gotta let everybody in.
Gotta let everybody in. Doesn't matter who they are, if they do right or where they've been. Everybody gets in.
I felt really cheesy when I was writing that, but I keep trying to write mission statements that really are alive to me. The music industry is, you know, we're entertainers. We're in entertainment, damn it, right? I am not the person to answer questions about socio-political questions. However, folk music is social and it's political. And so we're always trying to sing anthems for things that we truly believe, even if they're impossible. Because demanding the impossible is what every successful populist movement has done.
Like the hearts of big tent, gotta let everybody in. Doesn't matter who they are, if they do right or where they've been. Everybody gets in. My conclusion's not a great one. I'll leave that to the smarter ones. The soul is an idiot. It doesn't.
I don't know that I'm always the right canary in the right coal mine or the right person for that kind of thing, but I do feel the mantle very strongly in my tradition and really want to live through it in the live execution of our music.
Seen the sparrows in the air, a light on branches there, and there's no way that they're afraid of being 30. If I can't live clean, then I'd better love dirty. 'Cause the heart's a big tent. Gotta let everybody in. Doesn't matter.
To find a full list of the songs played in this episode and more about Willie Carlisle, go to kosu.org. Willie Carlisle has a string of upcoming dates, including an Opry debut in Nashville, Tennessee.
This morning a miracle happened as promised. The rising of the world's closest star.
Songwriters and Tour Writers is a production of KOSU and Oklahoma State University. Our editor is Ryan McCroy, and our cover art was created by Terry Ferris. Thanks again to Willie Carlisle, and thank you for listening. I'm Matthew Viriapa.
On this Week in Oklahoma Politics podcast, it's not just news headlines. It's a deeper conversation about what matters to you, your family, and your neighbors. Stay informed, stay engaged, and be part of the conversation shaping the future of our state. Subscribe now to This Week in Oklahoma Politics on your favorite podcast platform or at kosu.org. This Week in Oklahoma Politics, your voice, your state, your podcast.
Get ready for adventure with NPR's only actual play Dungeons & Dragons podcast. KOSU brings you Red Dirt D&D, featuring the world's greatest role-playing game, including music and sound effects like a classic radio show. Join our seasoned Red Dirt D&D players as they take you on a thrilling adventure through the world of Dungeons & Dragons. Catch new episodes every Wednesday on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as KOSU.org, or listen wherever you get your podcasts.